Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Kim Holderness.
And I'm Ben Holderness.
We host the Holderness Family Podcast every Tuesday.
You may know us from the silly videos that we make online.
Or a book about marriage called Everybody Fights.
Or as winners of season 33 of The Amazing Race.
Still can't believe that happened. Yeah. Listen, we do a lot of stuff, but our podcast is our most favorite thing.
Yeah, because every week we get to sit down face to face, talk to each other about marriage, family, mental health, or just anything that we want to know more about.
Sometimes we have expert interviews, sometimes it's just us, but our goal is to bring some joy and laughter and to your life every week.
Our other goal is that maybe you will learn something as well.
Right. So search the Holderness Family Podcast and check out our most recent episodes. We have one about staying organized with creators of the Home Edit.
And one about being diagnosed with ADHD as an adult.
We hope you'll join us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hey guys, Dave here. What you're about to hear is a 15-minute sample of an hour-long episode of me and Kathy talking about The Queen's Gambit, which we did over on our Patreon page. So we thought we'd just add a little sample in here, full of spoilers, by the way. So if you haven't seen the show, go watch the show because it's amazing. And if you like what you hear here, well, you can head over to patreon.com/thecinemile. And you can get access to the full episode and many other retro movie and TV reviews for the cost of $2 or $3 a month. And if you sign up before the end of November, then 100% of your December fee will go to Action for Children, which is an amazing charity here in the UK.
To be a good sports movie, you have to have an underdog, right?
Yeah.
So, sorry that she learned how to play in the basement of an orphanage. She's completely unprivileged. She is completely addicted to tranquilizers, which surprised me because I can't imagine the tranquilizers get like the brain going. And then she's a woman in this sexist world.
That was the point. It put her in a bit of a fugue state, which allowed almost her lizard brain to take over.
Well, yeah, true.
That's how she was able to sort
But all the things she was fighting against, and on top of that being a woman in this male-dominated world, and that's what made us cheer for her so much, because people would continually dismiss her for being a woman, and we were like, come on! It's like, there was so many times it was Rocky and Apollo Creed. Like, at the end, when the Russian, the big bad Russian guy goes, do you want to draw? And she's like, no. And we were like, what? Yeah. She doesn't want to go the distance. She skipped to Rocky too, like.
Which is it? You love that. She's
it was amazing.
Exactly. That was an amazing moment. I think you're right. And I think the what's so interesting about her as a character, though, is that, yes, she's got all those underdog qualities. And she is, in that era, doing a huge service to the feminist movement within a sexist industry. And that has an effect on a very specific individual, the woman you mentioned, who she plays that very first ever competitive game of chess with, and later she meets her again and she says, you were an inspiration to me, I never did play, but
she says, you had, I tell everyone you had two firsts at me, your first competitive game and your first period.
Tell everyone about your first
like,
period.
That feels like an overshare,
so inappropriate. But the so she did have an incredibly significant effect on that, and also the in the final episode, all the women looking for autographs for her in Soviet
Russia.
That was
amazing. Yeah.
So it
was like too good to be true.
Naturally, but my point is, she has this powerful effect on everybody around her, but she herself as a character is so interesting because she never strives to do any of it. The only thing that Beth Harmon sets out to do from the very beginning
is play chess.
It's just to play chess.
She's obsessed. She's got an obsession with chess.
It's just to play chess and to win because she's competitive and knows she's the best.
But this is why she's such a champion. Like we were saying, we could never be champions like that because we would always. I would have taken the draw.
Yeah.
Like in the first time she plays the Russian guy, she plays him three times. The first time she plays him and doesn't win, and like she's so angry at herself and she's like, he humiliated me. Whereas I'm like, oh my god, to get a seat at the table with the world champion is
she
like
can't accept second place.
Incredible. Yeah. Like And that's why she's a champion and I'm not, because I would be so honored to be sitting across from him and like even get like two moves in where she's like, he humiliated me. And that's the drive of a champ.
But
which is why Rocky literally was never a champ.
But it's also
only
a flaw.
Went the distance.
It's a flaw of hers because she is so insular that she's not aware of the effect that she is having on anybody else.
But is it a flaw? Like, why does she... Like, it's one of these things that's always levied at, say, a woman or somebody who's not white or somebody who's not straight. Somebody who deviates away from, like, the norm we see of, like, a white straight man in most facets of life being in a position of power. The onus is always put on that woman or that person of colour or that person who's gay to be, like, representative of their type. And like, why does Beth Harmon have to care what she's representing for women? Because it's put on her shoulders because she's the only woman. And it's really unfair. Like, no one's telling Benny in his stupid cowboy hat and like long leather jacket that like he needs to be an inspiration for people. Or
yeah, no, that's fine. I agree with your point that she doesn't need to acknowledge that burden which has been placed on her. However, I was going to say it's a flaw, her insular nature and her focus and determination is a strength which allows her to win at chess, but it's a flaw in that she doesn't actually notice the needs or of people around her or the effect she has on them.
Mm-hmm.
Case in point being bless the actor
Dudley
Dudley
from Harry Potter.
He'll always be Dudley.
He's the Kentucky
Potter.
State champ,
who by the way he is a great
he's
actor.
Amazing.
He's very good and is he has the best agent in the world right now because he's shown up in The Ballad of Buster Scruggs last year as a paraplegic. I've seen him. He was the bad guy in that Charlize Theron movie we watched on Netflix where
yeah,
they were all immortal.
We meant to do a movie.
Everywhere, man.
We meant to do a review of that Charlize Theron movie this summer and we just never did it because we couldn't even be bothered recording
whatever.
It. But he was great in it as like
Queen
a tech
Gambit.
CEO.
But she's kind of breaking his heart.
When he says her and he shows up for anyone who may not quite remember if you watched it when it first came out, he shows up at her house and like offers to like coach her or whatever and they become lovers purely out of convenience like from her end. And then he goes, I fixed my teeth for you. And it's like, that is the least
love.
Sexy thing you could ever... It's sexier to have rotten teeth and be cool about it. Yeah. Than to have perfect teeth and tell someone you fixed your teeth for them. The second he says I fixed my teeth for you, she's like, leave my house. Like, she definitely is aware of the effect she has on men and certainly enjoys it. I don't think she's oblivious to that at all.
Okay, maybe not oblivious, but she doesn't care really.
Oh no, she's single-minded. Like, she's like, I want to play chess and I'll also shag you.
But I think that's how she treats everything about life, because this
except
movie,
her mother's.
Yes, that's true. I'm not saying she's without empathy.
No, I know you're
not. But like, my point is she's living in a climate where women's rights and feminism, there's a huge movement. She is at the center of that in a niche industry. She's also in the middle of the Cold War. And we get hints of this coming through when she's being accompanied by a CIA agent who's looking for hints that her opponent is wishing to defect.
They're looking for Rocky IV.
They want
her to defeat communism.
Exactly. But she has no interest in any of it or concept
of it. She doesn't
give a shit. She doesn't
give like
a
at the
shit.
End they say,
and I find that really cool and
it's
interesting.
Cool, yeah. At the end they're like, very end, you did it, like you beat the Russians at their own game, you've got a dinner in the White House tonight, and she's like, bye, I have to play chess in the square in Moscow.
Yeah, it doesn't matter to her, and that's what makes her such a
but you know what
character.
Matters to her? Her relationship with her birth mother, which she's repeatedly through like nearly every episode, the birth mother's in it in flashback and is very traumatizing for her. And like, not in the least because the mother like tried to kill them both in a car, but Beth didn't die. And that is very traumatic. And like, so Beth has a lot of like memories of the mother. They're always bubbling through. And then when she gets adopted by... When she initially got adopted by this family, we were like, oh my God, like just the way we've seen the tropes of how these things work, immediately we're like,
yeah,
the dad's going to be abusive or violent.
Well,
or...
they give us the shot, right? The shot being she's in the back seat of the car.
dad looks at the rearview
driving,
mirror.
Dad's driving, looks at her in the rearview mirror. And then that's warning flag. Like, and that
we just went, no!
Such a seemingly innocuous thing. But in this context, in this situation, yeah. in the TV show where drama is going to happen, both our minds went to there.
We were like,
instantly.
No. And then what I was just...
So it was
brilliant.
Interesting that it didn't go there.
But it actually went in a way I never expected, where the dad basically effed off, left her and the mom. Interesting, like what it said about a woman in the 60s. They said if the orphanage finds out the dad's left the mom, she'll have to put her back in the orphanage, so they don't tell anyone. And in that moment, they become co-conspirators.
Yeah, yeah.
And they
it's so good.
Completely, they fall in love with each other. Like we learn that the mother lost a child. It sounds like her life's really sad. Like she never got to fulfill her dreams. She lost her child. Her husband left her. She's clearly got a drink problem.
But she like Beth, is this sort of has this talent, this incredible talent for the piano that was never. She didn't get the opportunity to realize it. And so it's a bit of that sort of like allowing Beth to, she's living vicariously through Beth.
Yeah.
And allowing her talents to foster and is invested while also reaping some financial benefits.
Exactly.
From it.
And I love
and
like,
living her life for once. I thought her whole,
I loved it.
Her journey was joyous. Yeah. And
she's incredible.
She was a brilliant actress as well.
Do you know who she is?
No, go on.
I've forgotten her name, but when I looked her up, she normally actually has long red hair and looks completely different. And she was like the mother in Diary of a Teenage Girl, and she's been in loads and loads of movies.
Oh, okay. She was excellent. And I'm with you. Their relationship
incredible.
Is so...
And Beth
the
loves
best
her.
Relationship in this show.
Yeah, and like Beth loves her so much. And like the mom kind of gets
she
in her
she calls her mother
say,
and means it.
I know. Yeah. And she says to her like, can I get 10% as your agent? And Beth's like, let's make it 15.
Oh, it's
and
such
it's just
a good moment.
So sweet. And
because Beth is a kind soul at heart and is
Beth
quite
is.
Gracious.
And
even
Beth,
though she comes across as this... cold, determined, almost
but
robotic.
Beth does love female friendship because in the orphanage, her best friend is Jolene, and that relationship
we
carries.
We could talk about Jolene
for
half an
that
hour.
That carries on throughout, and Beth and her mom, her adopted mom, who probably isn't that much older than her. I don't think she's probably in her early 30s, and Beth's like 16 or whatever. They are just like best mates.
Yeah.
And they, I mean, to a fault because the mom gives her booze and stuff. And Beth's
well,
stealing the mom's drugs.
It's got a dark edge to it. She's an enabler. She doesn't really, yeah, you're right. It is it's a friend relationship
it's
rather
friends,
than a mother-daughter thing.
But it's lovely. And I loved them together. And even when Beth has a very early scene where she goes to a party with like college people because she's learning Russian in the night school, which is awesome. And she phones the mom and like basically like, oh, I had sex last night, and the mom's like, oh well, you know, it's not a normal kind of conversation you probably have with your mom at that age about drinking and having sex.
I really enjoyed how like just sexually liberated Beth is as a character as well. You know, she's very comfortable with her sexual
sex life. And basically she's in the 60s, which is like more liberated for women, I think.
Yeah.
And also she's very one track mind about sports and stuff, and like she's not concerned about things. Like it's really interesting when Beth goes to secondary school or high school and we see her, and she begins high school, and Beth really loves fashion, we learn as the show goes on. But she like she is self-conscious when she joins because she knows her clothes aren't nice and she knows her shoes aren't nice, right? And that is something that she ends up having a very clear hang-up about. But when she actually goes to like the house of one of the popular girls who invites her over for like, they all watch a band camp or a video or whatever, it's really funny. The girls are all talking and she's so immediately bored by them that she just nicks a bottle of booze
and
leaves
the house. She
rejects it, yeah, she's not interested in their politics and their... like silliness. She is interested in their fashion though. Like she'll take out of it what interests her. And there was one thing that I thought was a little bit odd about the show. A couple of years later, Beth bumps into that same popular girl who has a baby, who's married and who has got a booze problem.
They imply has a drink problem,
And it's almost like the show was doing a bit of a thing that I don't like when people in bad American movies meet up with people from their high school and like
lord it up
kind
over
of lord
them
it up.
Kind of thing.
Except it was almost but like the show was trying to do
problems.
It but Beth wasn't doing it, but the show was like, oh look, you could have just been married at 18 and having babies, aren't you lucky you didn't do that. I don't know, there was something about that. That's the only scene that I didn't quite like in the movie.
But they don't really I kind of see where you're going, and I think that again is a trope and it did feel familiar.
It was the Julia Roberts moment, like big mistake.
Exactly. But they don't really, like, the show doesn't glamorize Beth's life. I think elements of it are glamorized, like the fashion and the setting and the victories and the chess. But mostly there's a sadness and a danger to how she, you know, how she lives her life and how she treats alcohol. And, you know, it doesn't feel glorified to me.
Oh my God, that scene when she's really little in the orphanage and they stop giving her the tranquilizers, the green pills, but she knows where they are and she goes in and gets them all and just like drinks them and falls backwards. Like that kid who played her, like that Fringe, it's all about that Fringe. Like
the Fringe was doing a lot of the work.
The Fringe did a heavy lifting. Like, but can we talk about the fashion for a minute?
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
What would you say if I told you there's a book that can teach you how to win The Bachelor?
What would you say if I told you producers caught multiple finalists reading that book in this season that's currently airing?
What would you say if I told you the producers don't want anyone to know that their show has been compromised?
How do we know all this? We wrote that book.
I'm Lizzie Pace.
And I'm Chad Colchin.
We're the authors of How to Win the Bachelor and the hosts of the Game of Roses podcast, a bi-weekly podcast where we break down all the biggest plays, errors, and MVPs in the game of reality television.
Listen to Game of Roses wherever you get your podcasts and go to howtowinthebachelor.com to get our book.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.